Jayaradha Madhava Kunjabihare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihare. Gopi Channa Bala Bhagiravarirhare. Gopi Channa Bala Bhagiravarirhare. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachariya. Yamuna Tira Vanachariya. Jai Om Vishnu Pad, Paramahamsa Pad, Rajagacharya Sotera Siddhashi, Shimani's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Text 37. So we'll do the verse today and speak a little bit about it, and I also want to give a short report on the recent Houston GBC and Temple Presidents meeting. So we'll do both of those today. Prapancham nishprapanchopi. Vidangs bayasi bhutale. Prapana janatananda. Sandoham pratitum prabho. Prapancham nishprapanchopi. Vidang bayasi bhutale. Prapana janatananda. Sandoham pratitum prabho. Prapancham nishprapanchopi. Vidang bayasi bhutale. Prapana janatananda. Sandoham pratitum prabho. Ladies. Prapancham, that which is material. Nishprapancha, completely transcendental to material existence. Api, although. Vidambayasi, you imitate. Bhutale, on the surface of the earth. Prapana, who are surrendered. Janata, of people. Ananda Sandoham, the great variety of different kinds of ecstasies. Pratitum, in order to spread. Prabho, O Master. Translation purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. My dear Master, although you have nothing to do with material experience, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that just as a lamp does not seem to shine as brightly in sunlight as it does in shade, or as a diamond does not seem as brilliant on a silver platter as it does on a plate of blue glass. The Lord's pastimes as Govinda do not seem as amazing in the transcendental abode of Vaikuntha as they do within this material realm of Maya. Lord Krishna comes to the earth and acts towards his pure devotees exactly like a devoted son, boyfriend, husband, father, friend, and so on. And within the darkness of material existence, these brilliant, liberated pastimes give unlimited ecstasy to the surrendered devotees of the Lord. In his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada quotes Lord Brahma as follows, "I can also understand that your appearance as a small cowherd boy, a child of the cowherd men, is not at all a material activity. You are so much obliged by their affection that you are here to enthuse them with more loving service by your transcendental presence." Om Gyan Timurandasya Ganajana Salakaya Chakshur Mitanina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatrubhischa Kribasindhu Bhavacha Patidano Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So this material world is predominated by the external energy, prakriti. Our particular world that we live in our perceptual field, is composed of interactions of matter. This is pretty much what we are doing, what we are interacting with. What we experience day to day is material interaction. However, the spiritual energy is also present within this material world. We understand the spiritual energy through the presence of the Paramatma, the Supersoul within the heart, within this material world, the all-pervading Brahman effulgence of the Lord, which pervades throughout the universes, and also through the presence of living entities, the spirit soul, who is also spiritual energy. Of course, the Brahman and the Paramatma are mostly experienced by transcendentalists and not something that we so much appreciate unless we have spiritual vision. But we do experience the presence of other living entities, and those who are a little bit intelligent can understand the spiritual presence or the spiritual essence that is within every single living entity within the bodies that they inhabit. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the seventh chapter, both the gross and the subtle material energies are described. And then Krishna says, "Besides these, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mine, which it comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature." So we have this interaction of both the spiritual and material energies, and it is the spiritual energy which gives animation, which gives life to the material energy. Srila Prabhupada points out that matter comes from life, but life cannot come from matter. So originally there must be spiritual energy to make everything else manifest. If we only had material energy alone, there would be very little attraction. You can understand that. That the real life and the real energy and the attraction of living entity, even in this material world, is because of the presence of spiritual energy. I was thinking, what would it be like if you were a living entity? There were no other living entities. You had all material opulences, but there was no other living entity. It'd be a very, very dull existence. I was thinking, it's kind of a mundane thought just came to me a few minutes ago. When I was a small child, I used to like these comic books of Donald Duck, and one of the characters was this Uncle Scrooge. Some of you may remember this if you have similar narratives as I do. But they used to picture him in this huge bin or vat or vault of money, and he'd just sit there kind of like playing with his coins and his dollar bills. And he's thinking, okay, you know, you might get a little sense of, I mean, how long would that last? How long could you sit there, you know, and play with your money, you know, with no other living entity present, no other interactions, no loving relationships? You know, this gets dull very, very fast. And of course, that's the nature of this material world. It loses its interest appeal very, very soon in itself. It is really only the interaction with other living entities or with the spiritual energy in some way that gives us any happiness or any real enjoyment, any relationship. Because that's the nature of a living entity. Our nature is for rasa. Our nature is relationship. Our nature is to have loving exchanges with others, ultimately with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even within this mixture of energies, in the material world, our experiences and happiness are quite limited. The soul is heavily constrained by these particular material bodies. It's like, you know, it's trying to, like, sometimes you hear expressions like swimming through molasses or something like that. And that's kind of how it feels, being a pure spirit soul in a material body in the material world, isn't it? Everything is very difficult. You ever notice how difficult it is to achieve anything? You know, it's hard for us, you know, there we had a deity committee meeting the other night. And, you know, many topics come up, and there's always topics like, well, how do we keep the pujari room clean? Do we need to do a maha cleanup? This kind of, I mean, even just little things, even in a spiritual atmosphere, it's so difficult to make the material energy cooperate with us and do what we want. So it's a very hard struggle for the living entity. And indeed, we are struggling with the modes of material nature, and everything becomes difficult to achieve, even for devotees who are surrounded by a great deal of spiritual energy. So it's into this material world that Krishna comes when he makes his appearance in Vrindavan 5,000 years ago, or whatever particular planet he is manifesting his pastimes on these earthly realms. So when he comes, Krishna comes with his full set of energies, with all of his associates, with all of his paraphernalia, and with his full display of incredible, wonderful pastimes, extraordinary pastimes. He exhibits extraordinary energies. So into this sort of a dull material existence, when Krishna manifests the full weight of his spiritual nature, it is indeed very, very amazing and astonishing. And that's what's described by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that he explains that the pastimes in this material world become even more brilliant. And I think in it doesn't quote it here, but in Vishwanath's purport, he calls it astonishing and amazing. He uses these words, amazing, astonishing. Krishna's pastimes in this material world, even more so than those in Goloka. So why is this? How are they even more astonishing than pastime? They're basically the same type of pastime. I mean, what we see exhibited in Vrindavan is what happens in the spiritual world, right? But in the spiritual world, when you think about it, the incredible spiritual energy of Krishna is the norm, right? That's what goes on. Amazing, incredible, unlimited spiritual energy that is not bound by time, by circumstance, you know, or by space. That's what's happening all the time. So I don't think that it ever becomes dull or taken for granted. We don't want to say that about the residents of Goloka, because they're experiencing ever-increasing ecstasy. But in contrast to the material world, when Krishna comes, it is incredibly different than what our norm in this material world is. So first of all, Krishna's pastimes are somewhat miraculous, right? They defy the normal laws of material nature. That's what, when people talk about miracles, that's what a miracle is. Something that defies the normal laws of nature. And so, you know, when they're trying to, I don't know too much about it, I'm not a Catholic, but wasn't a Catholic, I'm a Vaishnava. But when they want to canonize these saints, you know, they have to find one or two, don't they? I don't know much about it, but I think they have to find a miracle, don't they? But they have to find that they did something miraculous, like something happened that wouldn't normally happen, either some divine intercession or some healing power or something that couldn't be explained by medical science. So, you know, they try to find one or two miracles, the person in their lifetime. When you think about it, Krishna is performing miracles on a minute-to-minute basis when he manifests his pastimes in the material world, isn't he? How many cows did Krishna have? Someone just said the other day, how many zeros? One and 17 zeros, was it? Somebody, would you? I can't remember who was saying it. But anyway, it's billions and billions of cows. Now, how do you fit billions of cows within the material space of the Vrindavan, Mathura, however many square miles it is? You can't. It's not material. It's a spiritual experience. It's a spiritual phenomena. It's miraculous. So that's why, and Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, small boy, lifting a huge mountain on the tip of his finger. Everything Krishna does is wonderful and miraculous. And because we are used to the constraints of material energy, which limits everything that we do, it is even more amazing when Krishna comes and performs these in the material world. So, very, very astonishing pastimes that appear even more astonishing than they do in Goloka. The other point that is raised here in the verse in the purport is, why does Krishna imitate material life? I thought that was kind of interesting. It says, Lord Brahma says, you have nothing to do with the material world, but you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. I was thinking about this concept of Krishna imitating material life. In one sense, it's kind of an unusual way of putting it because we often think of this material world imitates the spiritual world, right? This material world is described as a perverted reflection of the spiritual. In other words, all the inherent rasas, relationships, everything is there in the spiritual world, and then, of course, it reflects in this material world with all of the material inebrieties that are associated with it. So in one sense, it's kind of an interesting thing to say that Krishna imitates material world or the material relationships. But what he does is, it is described. He comes in as human form. You know, obviously he's not a human being like us, but a human-like form, we could say. So Krishna comes in this form where he relates and associates with human beings when he comes in this material world as though he were one of us. Of course, he is not. But the residents of Vrindavan are so much in love with Krishna, they are just so dedicated to him that they are covered by, we talk about this many times in past classes since we've been studying the 10th canto, how they are covered by this yoga maya simply to increase their love. Because if the mood of majesty, the mood of opulence, the mood of Krishna's full power as the supreme personality of Godhead were manifest, then there would be this awe and reverence. That would be, and this would not be as pleasing to Krishna as the more intimate relationships where the devotees become Krishna's parents, Krishna's friends, Krishna's lovers, etc. And all the other types of devotees, the cows, the trees, everything in Vrindavan. So the form of Krishna, so-called imitating these human relationships, is a more intimate manifestation of his loving relationships than a display of his power. So we can see from this that Krishna's pastimes when he comes into this world are so intimate and so wonderful and loving because he takes this role as a human being, but at the same time that they are amazing. At the same time, they are totally transcendental and he manifests incredible pastimes. In fact, often his pastimes are so incredible that not to break this mood of intimacy and have to experience more of a mood of awe and reverence, we see over and over the devotees of Vrindavan almost don't recognize his amazing pastimes. You know, even when he lifted Govardhan Hill, they say, oh, well, probably Nanda helped him, you know, or, you know, he kills a demon, they think, you know, they're not sure. You know, there's always some other alternative explanation than Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even when he's doing these amazing things. And that is, of course, so that they can retain this loving relationship of intimacy that they have with him. Okay, we've covered some of these points pretty thoroughly in some of the really wonderful classes in the last few days, so I think we can go, unless there's any real quick comment or question. Yes.
Brahma's prayers. a creative energy. Can you look it up? It's 3:9:15, I think. It has the same word, the same vidambanani that in that prayer. He says, I can't remember the first word, but te naika janma shamalam sahasaiva hitva, and look up the word vidambanani, and he says, you have that? No, you don't have it there. But so they're mysterious imitations, exact same thing. And but it says, and after many births, then if one takes the holy name, he gives up sinful reaction of many births by taking the holy name at the time of death. So it's a similar thing.
Where was that verse found?
3:9:15 or 14.
Well, it's interesting because I think in Vishwanath's purport, he says Brahma quotes this verse. He didn't just say speaks it. So it sounds like
he's quoting himself.
Well, I don't know.
Vidambanani, the same word was used.
That it's found previously. Anyway, he indicated that this is similar to a previous verse in the Bhagavatam. So that must be it.
What is it? 9:15. Yes, Yavatara.
Namani Yesu Vigami Vivasha Grinanti. And the English is, let me take shelter of the lotus feet of him whose incarnations, qualities, and activities are mysterious imitations of worldly affairs. One who invokes his transcendental names, even unconsciously, at the time he quits his life, is certainly washed immediately of the sins of many, many births and attains him without fail.
Great, thank you very much. Okay, I think I'm going to go on at this point. We'll see if there might be any time at the end, but I doubt it. I wanted to speak just a few minutes about our recent GBC and Temple Presidents meeting in Houston. A lot of times we have these different meetings and I feel like the devotees don't really quite know what's going on or hear too much about it. So I just want to take a few minutes. We met in Houston last week, and we had 2 days of our GBC and Executive Committee meetings, and then we had 3 more days of Temple Presidents meetings. About 60 devotees attended, a very, very nice turnout, representing about 35 temples. We were very well represented from Alachua. I was there, and of course, Mother Mukhya as our temple president, Leela Sukha as our Child Protection Office National Director was there, and also Mana Ram came to present on the youth programs. In addition, there was quite a few devotees from Gainesville also came. So this was just talk about some of the highlights. I'll just mention some of the local interest highlights and then some of our larger national, international themes. And then we always have some specific, preaching projects or different programs that temples are doing that are always very enlivening to see what people are doing around the country and also in Canada. And then, of course, we always have our necessary business, policies, that kind of stuff that's a little bit on the dry side, but things that we really need to do that temple presidents need to take care of the business of running the society. So just as far as from Numaram and Reti, Mother Mukhya gave a very nice report. And we've done this frequently. I've given reports in the past on different things that we do here and our such as Rathi Atras and like that. And Mother Mukhya gave a report on 2 projects here. One, the Bhakti Bhavan project that Mother Lakshmimoni and Mother Akuti are running and some of their different preaching programs, and also some opportunities that were there as a training center for young women, or not just young women, any new women coming to Krishna consciousness, because we don't have much facility like that in North America. And then she also gave a short presentation on the Bhakti Bhavan, our Krishna conscious school that's here on the property, and particularly their expansion project. Next year, as some of you probably know, they're going to expand into middle school. Eventually, we will only go up to 6th grade now, but we'll be continuing on 7th grade next year and eventually going up through 10th grade. And Jai Sri Radhe is going to be heading up that project, and so she's developing that now. And, of course, you all know that I'm the proud father, Jai Sri Radhe. So, no, Jeanette. But so she presented that. And then Mana Ram Prabhu gave a nice presentation, who's also my son-in-law, but on their Mexico youth tour. And it was a very, very nice slide presentation. They visited 14, they had 14 different preaching programs in like 17 days or something like that. And they put on cultural presentations of dance, of plays, a lot of kirtan, lecture, prasadam distribution, and book distribution all over Mexico. Very, very nice. They visited some temples. They visited also, you know, they always do a few sort of fun scenic things, or visit the Mayan ruins or something like that, or go to a beach. But primarily, it was very, very strong preaching programs, and all the youth put them on completely. It's all done by the youth. They're the ones who are doing all the work and the organization and presentations. You know, they're distributing books, and you know, they distribute thousands of plates of prasadam, and they distributed just in the 2 or 3 weeks they're there in Spanish 3,000 books. You know, so and. Some of these are small places that have never seen devotees before. So it's very, very wonderful preaching, seeing Lord Chaitanya's movement going to every town and village. Okay, Lila Sukha, who's also here from here in Alachua, she's not only our child protection team leader, but she's also our national director or coordinator of the North American Child Protection Office. And so she gave a very, very nice presentation talking about what leaders needed to do about, you know, ensuring the protection of our children, what steps needed to be do, preventive steps in our temples. And she's given similar presentations, of course, here in the community, and that was very well received. Then also at Gainesville, the Krishna House gave a nice presentation. They brought about five, Kalakanta Prabhu brought five devotees, I think. You know, a lot of young people came, and they sort of told what they did and how they came to Krishna consciousness and what was going on in Krishna House. I think they have over 30 or 35 residents now there. So that program is really growing and expanding. It's just doing wonderfully. And has so many different, mostly young people, you know, coming and joining. And, you know, they don't necessarily have to make what I think what makes it work so well, they don't necessarily have to make a commitment like you're moving into the ashram and this is your life commitment. You know, they just sign up for a semester while they're going to college and they live there and they agree to go to the programs like that. Of course, most of them become full-time, lifetime devotees, you know, after having that experience. So that was very nice hearing about that. Some of the larger topics or themes that were discussed, Rabindra Sarup Prabhu gave our keynote address. We try to have some kind of inspirational talk beginning as our first presentation. And as some of you know, he has been working on, we have a GBC committee called the Prabhupada Position Committee, about really establishing the position of Srila Prabhupada for the next thousands of years in ISKCON. And his presentation was on Srila Prabhupada as the founder Acharya. It was very, of course, very intelligent, intellectually well-researched presentation on what it meant that Srila Prabhupada was founder Acharya and how that is a very, very unique and distinct position that only Srila Prabhupada will ever have in our movement and why we need to understand that and keep Srila Prabhupada forefront. He's close to completing a book that he's writing on this. He's going to give us the first draft of it in Mayapur, I think, to some of the GBC and leaders to make comments, and very soon he'll have this out. So this will be a very, very wonderful foundational document that so people will really understand who Srila Prabhupada is and why we'll be worshiping Srila Prabhupada on the Vyasasan there 5,000 years from now. Hopefully. You know, of course it will. Lord Chaitanya's movement, you know, we'll go on without fail. We had a BBT presentation by Savas Prabhu and by Vaisheshika. And if any of you ever heard Vaisheshika give a presentation, it's always, as Buddy Narayan put it, he says, you could listen to Vaisheshika describe paint drying on a wall and it would be exciting. You know, he's that type of inspirational speaker about book distribution particularly, and of course anything on Krishna consciousness, a very, very advanced devotee, and we all felt very inspired. But so we're talking about, we had set a goal of January last year to increase book distribution in North America by 20%. Book distribution has been a little bit down, coming up a bit, but we decided if we could make a 20% increase based upon remittances to the BBT. Now, of course, that always translates into the number of books. It's pretty much a one-to-one correspondence. Then it brings the BBT to a certain level of fiscal health, we could say, you know, that enables them to really be able to reprint books. A lot of times now we experience titles go out of stock, and there just isn't the money there. So we need to bring it up to a level where we can really keep book distribution high where we can, and what to speak of, the benefit and please and pleasure to Srila Prabhupada of just increasing the number of books that are going out to the conditioned souls. So we were kind of like all through the year not sure whether we were going to make it and, you know, what temples could increase and this and that. So the final total was for the year 2012 an overall increase of 28.6%. So so we were all very, very pleased by that. And of course, so we really wanted to thank and congratulate all the temples for their efforts. And we all agreed that this year we'll do another 20% increase. You know, of course, Srila Prabhupada told us double every year. But anyway, you know, maybe we can at least do 20% increase, you know, and get some of the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. And of course, we talked a lot about the principles of book distribution, book printing, all of that, the BBT work. We also had an international GBC strategic planning update that Rompad Swami gave about the work that's been done internationally. And I've given some of those presentations here over the last couple of years. So probably, anyway, take too long to get into the details. But the types of structural and organizational changes and improvements we're trying to implement to really create a strong ISKCON society for the future. We had a report from the ISKCON Communication Office that Nutama gave. Actually, we have a North American officer, Keshava Prabhu, who is in Toronto, but he had a family illness, serious emergency, so he wasn't able to come, and Nutama gave that presentation. We now have we did not have funded offices up in, before this last year. Now we have a funded North American Communication Office. We have a funded North American Child Protection Office. We also have a National Support Office. We've had that for a while, but you know, which does a lot of this background work and assistance for the temples and for the organization. And we're also trying to create a legal fund, which is an unfortunate necessity in the age of Kali. You know, that we find that there's, you know, always these legal issues or challenges. I'm sure some of you know about some of the different things that we've been involved with. But, you know, this all requires a lot of work, a lot of effort, and devotees really, you know, putting in that kind of behind-the-scenes work that's not very glamorous. You know, it's not like, you know, when you say 28% book distribution, you know, increase Kijaya, when you say get our legal fund together, you know, not quite so exciting, but very, very much necessary to do this kind of work. So we always have to do those necessary business types of things as well. You know, we talked about membership, progress, and policy development, and we don't even really have a clear definition of what is a member of ISKCON. I mean, these things are things that we need to really define and work out because, you know, you go to 20 different places, there's 20 different definitions and policies. ISKCON Resolve gave a presentation on the mediation and ombudsman services that ISKCON Resolve offers. Brajabihari and Brahmatirtha Prabhu in Gainesville are two of the main people that do that work, and they just do incredible service. Almost no cost to anybody that they carry on and do so much work helping devotees and also helping the leaders both and resolving problems within ISKCON. It's a great resource. We had a pastoral abuse policy review, another one of those not very nectar topics, but something very, very necessary. Paharna Prabhu is our director of our pastoral abuse office, and she's putting out materials and brochures, and we have, you know, policies and procedures in place if those issues arise, which unfortunately they do. Talked about policies on leader solicitation in North American temples. Now, what does that mean? Well, there are some temple presidents who aren't always so happy when a wandering sannyasi comes in from somewhere else in the world and collects several thousand dollars in the congregation and is gone. And, you know, so in other words, these things need to have policies. So we discussed that, what kind of policies, things like, you know, having advanced, you know, notice, permission, if you're coming to visit another temple, collecting money, that sort of thing. Anyway, things the leaders have to work through, policies on changing residence. What's the protocol? Is it okay if I'm over here in another temple and I think, oh, you know, Krishna Keshava's kind of doing a nice job. Let me call him up and see if I can lure him over to my temple. I'll give you more money, you know, or whatever. That wouldn't lure him because he's totally above mundane considerations like that, but just as an example. So in other words, yeah, I mean, you know, people are free individuals to travel and go where they want, but does there need to be some protocol? You know, some, you know, etiquette, you know, between temples, that sort of thing. Safety and security issues. We had another serious fire in our movement, a kitchen fire in Berkeley, actually, a few months ago. Very serious. The body will be all right, but seriously burned. So in other words, things like that that we just want people to make their awareness of. Going back a little bit to some of the nectar, Bhadri Narayan Prabhu always gives his world review of ISKCON. This is a yearly thing he does. He puts together, you know, 100 or 200 slides of just far-out interesting projects going on all over the globe, things that ISKCON are doing. That's always very entertaining, enlivening, in his own unique style. And some of the other, another thing we do is we always have individual temples, you know, talk about things that they're doing, just like Mother Mukhya gave a report on some of the things going on in Alachua and Gainesville. They talked about what's happening at Krishna House. Some of the other ones that were mentioned were Bhakti Marga Swami gave us a slideshow and talked about preaching in Cuba. Did you all know that there's preaching in Cuba, that there's devotees, initiated devotees in Cuba? Yeah, it's happening. It's you have to be a little bit careful. You know, it is still a communist regime, but they're not too bad. They're trying to become actually registered as a authorized sort of church. So, so right now they can't really have people are coming. Coming into the programs, chanting Hare Krishna, and there's a few, there's a handful of initiated devotees now, you know. So that was really enlivening. Ma Tattva talked about developing brahmacharya ashrams, which is kind of an endangered species a little bit in our movement. And, you know, there are two or three places where that's going, and he sort of talked about what's needed to have a Maha Tattva from San Diego. And of course, he's a brahmachari and he has a strong ashram program there. So something that we really need. You know, we talk about varnashram a lot. And sometimes we think sometimes we have a limited concept. We think varnashram means householders on farms. Well, that's one varn and one ashram, but there are four of each. You know, and brahmachari preachers is another ashram that we need to promote. Okay, New Vrindavan, a couple presentations from there. Tapapunja Prabhu talked about his small farm project about preaching in ISKCON, which is really interesting because we have a similar concept. I think Mukhya's talked about this eco-village or farm idea that we're trying to develop on our property. We're probably not ever, let's face it, in Alachua we're not going to probably do huge, large-scale farming. You know, we probably won't be totally self-sufficient, but at least we can make some beginnings and we can demonstrate the principles, which are very powerful preaching. And that's what he's done in New Vrindavan. The farming and gardening he does, even more so than producing food, he has many, many people coming visiting. He has all sorts of relationships with different universities. Classes come, students do internships. He's given presentations, even at national conventions of like sustainable agriculture and things like that. So it's really strong preaching that can come out of our farm project activities. Also, they did a festival of colors at New Vrindavan, and Jai Krishna Prabhu gave us a report on that, something we're thinking about perhaps doing here. This festival of colors is an offshoot of Holi, you know, where the colors are thrown around, but they found that this is actually very popular. Young Americans seem to like to spray colors all over each other. And some of you know that in Utah, Charu Prabhu has promoted that for several years, and he's up to where he has 80,000 people come every year to his Festival of Colors. And in fact, they had a 32-mile backup on the roads this year, so the state of Utah and the county, they're going to expand the roads, add lanes to all the roads coming into the temple because he gets such huge crowds there for different festivals. So anyway, it's the thing, what it does is it, and of course the whole thing is while it's going on, you have constant kirtan, chanting, chanting and dancing the whole time. So thousands of young people who probably never would come to our temples or never have come to our temples, they come somehow and they chant Hare Krishna. That's the point of it. Well, you don't have to do it on holy. You can do it any time. You can do a festival of colors. Yeah, you can do it on a any time. Yeah. No, this should be done out in the cow field, you know, not in the temple. we also had a final one I just want to mention, report from Sean Bihari from Atlanta. Some of you know him. He's been here before. He gave a report on the Motel Gita project, which I think I may have the figure wrong. I didn't write it down, but I think they've distributed something like 135,000 Bhagavad Gitas in motels in America. And this year their goal is 65,000 additional. How are they able to get 200,000 Bhagavad Gitas in motels? Some of it has to do with demographics. 65% of all motels and hotels in the United States are owned by people of Indian origin. So it's a very, very ripe audience. And what they've done is they go to these conventions of hotel owners, and they set up a booth and like that, and they get hundreds and hundreds of mostly the Indian hotel owners who, of course, understand the Bhagavad Gita. They know the Bhagavad Gita. Even if they're not strictly Vaishnavs, they understand, you know, that this is a spiritual book and this is a good thing to do. And, of course, they're used to, you know, the Gideon societies putting Bibles in hotel rooms, you know, for years and years and years. So it's not a new concept to have a religious book in the, you know, alongside the bedstead, you know, in the drawer. But this has been very successful. A lot of times they get the motel owners to sponsor the books, to buy them. And if not, then they get other sponsors. You know, they'll get donations and sponsors, and they'll give them the books. But they've had very, very good response. There's been some good articles about it. And we've also done this program here from Alachua. Some of you know, I think it was in some newsletters that Nandini Kishore has headed up this program here and really done a wonderful job and distributed, you know, a couple thousand Gitas in motels in Florida. So that's an ongoing project and been very, very successful. So those are some of the types of things that we talked about and happened there in Houston. I'll just probably end there as we're out of time. Oh, I also just wanted to mention, the devotees in Houston were absolutely wonderful. It was the prasadam was amazing. The facilities were all great, very inexpensive for the devotees. And they're doing a lot there. They've got two new guest houses that were really nice to stay in. I mean, they're like, you know, really, really beautiful, nice rooms and everything. And so they're doing a lot there. Of course, they've been working on their new temple. You know, they're building this new wonderful temple, and they've been building it for several years now. But it's close to being finishing. I think they want to have their opening in Govardhan Puja this year. And I'll have a wonderful home for Sri Sri Radha Nilamadava there. Okay. Any quick question or comment? Yeah, otherwise you should probably end. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.